This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, March 15th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, you're working on short sleep. You had a big night last night.
Oh, yeah. It is officially March Madness. We did four mini episodes of Courtside previewing every region of the NCAA tournament bracket. And we got started at about 10 o'clock. Finished recording around 11:40, and then I was up till it was almost 3 o'clock. Buster, I thought of you when I went to bed. I said I'm closer to Buster waking up now than I will be when I actually wake up in the morning.
That's really funny. I was up at 4:30, but I don't care about like how sleepless you are, how hard you're working. I need some inside information about the bracket this year, because I got a 16-year-old son who talks some serious smack.
Oh, man.
Like, last night, he was like, I already filled out my bracket.
Oh.
And I got to say, I don't feel as well-armed this year in picking, probably because I didn't watch as much, because Vanderbilt wasn't good this year in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel as well-armed as I usually am. So what do you got for me?
I like a lot of chalky stuff. I mean, Gonzaga has a great little area where they can get to the Final Four. Texas would be my kind of quote-unquote sleeper there, a three seed, but I like them to get to the Final Four. Who else we got? Illinois is probably the best team in the country right now. They took Ohio State to overtime, but they've been playing really well with Iodesumo and Kofi Coburn. So I like Illinois, Texas, Gonzaga, and who is my other Final Four pick? Ohio State's looking really good. So lean chalk. We could talk a little bit later, Buster, if you need some help. I'm here for you.
Yeah, and I like this system because then if, of course, I listen to you and I get it wrong, then I can blame you.
Right? Yeah,
and
hey, sure.
I can just tell Jake, my son, I said, well, you know what? I thought I was talking to an expert and I wasn't. And if I'm right, then I get all the credit for making the right choice.
Hey, it works out. I'm cool with that.
That's being a dad. Some news and notes before we talk to Jessica Mendoza today. Washington Nationals pitcher Steven Strasburg left his start early. It was a little calf issue. He's saying it's nothing major. That was, of course, on Sunday. He struck out four and walked one in 2 1/3 scoreless innings against the Houston Astros. Lance McCullers was on the mound for the Astros. And I tell you what, struck out a bunch of guys.
And this is going to be a formidable Astros lineup, especially with, we'll get to it sooner or later, Yordan Alvarez being back.
Altuve to Correa, and they turn the double play on Kyle Schwarber. So after a couple of base hits, Lance rolls up the ground ball. He has been one of the best in baseball at getting the ground ball. Here he faces Yan Gomes and delivers a called third strike postseason. And I think he is ready to show everybody he can deal for 162. Stuff is there. We know that.
Yeah, stuff absolutely there. That from the Houston Television Network. I think Lance McCullers this year, absolute bounce back, comeback player of the year candidate based on what we've seen in spring training so far. Trevor Cahill finalized a one-year, $1.5 million deal to join the Pittsburgh Pirates. It makes sense for him. He can go to a place where he can go and get a chance to pitch, maybe get flipped to a contender in midseason. The Cleveland Indians traded infielder Mike Freeman to the Cincinnati Reds. They released outfielder Billy Hamilton, and they announced that Shane Bieber, Cy Young Award winner in the American League, will start on opening day. Former Indian Carlos Carrasco spoke with reporters on Sunday. He's been dealing with a sore elbow, but in talking with reporters on Sunday, he said he thinks he's going to be back by opening day. His manager, Luis Rojas, said he's glad to hear Carrasco's optimism, but he's still taking a wait-and-see approach. And yesterday, Padres manager Jace Tingler said catcher Austin Nola has a fractured middle finger on his left hand, his not throwing hand, and they will be evaluating that going forward. Now, before we hear from Jess and from Mike Trout in a rapid-fire interview we did with him the other day, and David Vasse, who does Dodger Talk for 570 AM out in LA as we go through the National League West previews, I want to mention ESPN's Tournament Challenge. It's time to fill out a bracket. If there were a bracket of my favorite sports traditions, filling out a bracket would be the champion of that bracket. There's no doubt about that. I love taking on my friends and family in the ESPN Tournament Challenge. I got to beat my 16-year-old son. And beating every single one of them is something I strive to do. Sign up now for ESPN Tournament Challenge at ESPN.com/bracket. And this year, you can boost your bracket with ESPN Plus. Use the bracket predictor to analyze each matchup. Get recommended picks one game at a time. And import your picks directly into ESPN's Tournament Challenge. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst for ESPN on baseball games. But Jess, over the weekend, you were going through a lot of sports memorabilia at your folks' house.
Yes. I don't know. I'm sure everyone's had that time, right? Where you, like, my parents moved out of the house they've lived in for 50 years, but I'm going through, like, I mean, it's one thing, like, old trophies from, like, you know, when you were little, that's like one thing, but then, oh my goodness, just random, like, memories. And it was crazy. Like, when you think about the amount of, first of all, like, signed softballs, you know, just the people I used to get, you know, Olympic memorabilia. I know that's another level, but, like, I mean, I must have 13 different helmets. Like, what was I don't know why, but, like, I kept, like, all my helmets every game I played in the Olympics. I counted 21 pairs of cleats. And it was hard. Wow. Because they all have the flag, my number, the rings on them. And it was so cool because I ended up getting a text message from an old coach of mine randomly. It was just like, hey, Jess, do you happen to have, like, any old jerseys or cleats or anything? We're trying to put some stuff up in restaurants here in my hometown. And I was like, thank you. Because I was literally like, my poor husband was like, you are not bringing another pair of cleats to this house. Like, I didn't know what to do with it all. And I couldn't throw it away. And so they ended up picking it up. They're actually going to end up donating. They're going to do some fundraisers and donate to all the local teams in the area where I grew up. And so, like, I almost cried. I was so happy because I had no idea what to do with all this stuff.
Yeah. What were you going to do with it? Because you know what? You're not quite at the, I definitely hit a point, like, in my mid-40s when I'm like, I'm just throwing stuff out. Like, you know, this college paper that I wrote when I was, you know, on the United States diplomacy during the Civil War, I don't need it for the rest of my life, right? The one that I got an A-minus on, and I just started throwing stuff out. So what would you have done with it?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thrown it out. I would have brought it home, which would have been like a huge, like, are you serious? Because it's not even like it's, you know, I mean, obviously 20 pairs of cleats.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have figured out a way to eventually then, like, do what I did, like, find local teams. If, you know, there's always, you know, a fundraiser that's looking for stuff. And, but to come home with helmets and cleats, and, I mean, there were bat bags and my original, like, bats that I used, like, it's just, oh, it's so hard. I ended up throwing away, though, quite a bit of stuff at it. That's why it's an emotional thing when you're going through all the years of everything that you've done.
The one thing in the end that I absolutely love to keep is I've got this autograph from Pee Wee Reese that I got when I was 11 years old. The Hall of Fame shortstop. I attended a playoff game in 1975. The Red Sox were playing host to the Oakland Athletics, and I got to sit next to Pee Wee Reese. And I'm so glad that I have that autograph. I also, it's done on a scorebook, and I misspelled about half the players' names with my, you know, 11-year-old scrawl. So that's kind of fun.
So cute. Did you keep that too, the scorebook?
No, just the pages.
Dang, you know,
the page,
I would love to see 11-year-old Buster like trying to guess like phonetically, maybe sounding out. Like,
oh, I've got those pages because Pee Wee Reese and Eddie Papowski, who was a coach on the Red Sox,
their
autographs. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good. Okay. Phew.
All right. So yesterday, this is what happened in a game between the Mets and the Cardinals. Give a listen to this extended at bat that kept going and going.
Jordan Hicks is the new pitcher for St. Louis. Here's the 0-2. Here's the 1-2. Gives to one to the Padres. Here's the 13th pitch now. And that one is fouled the other way. My goodness gracious. Luis Guillorme putting up quite an at-bat here from Hicks. And that one is poked. Foul. One more time. And that one is...
Oh, my goodness.
Fouled off. Molina couldn't hang on to it. And again, Guillorme stays alive. Be excited to see what's going to happen on pitch 19. And that one is bounced. Foul.
This is hilarious.
Are Dominic and Pete trying to get the weave going? Bat. And that one misses inside.
Oh, look at that reaction from Dominic.
I thought it was 3-2.
One more time.
Yeah! Wow.
This is the 22nd pitch of the at-bat from Hicks to Guillorme. Yeah! And Guillorme works out a walk.
22 pitches, he draws a walk, but I thought the best thing, Jess, and when I saw this this morning, I thought of you, knowing how much you would love the growing reaction from his teammates in the Mets dugout.
That was exactly it, to see Dom Smith and Pete Alonso like dropping down to his knees, like, oh my gosh, like, and that's so true. I mean, that's like your teammate, and you get to like pitch 13, 14, you're like, what's happening now? And I mean, I'm watching it going, this is ridiculous, like, especially you got Hicks throwing 100 miles an hour. It's not like it's some random guy up there. Just the battle, the ultimate battle. And then they're getting the crowd in it. They're asking everyone in the crowd. And then, like, I mean, it became like, even for everyone involved in the play, they're like laughing. Like, seriously, like, are we just going to keep doing this? It was awesome. It was perfect.
You know what I love too? Actually, this was a great example of how this new rule of being able to call off innings is a good thing. You know, there's Jordan Hicks out there. He's had elbow surgery. He's trying to get his work in. You know, he has his great plate appearance. The idea that you'd have to burn through a couple relievers and take him out prematurely, you don't want that in this situation,
no.
Which is why I love this rule in an exhibition game.
Oh gosh, I love, and I hope they do this every spring training, where the ability, and again, both teams have to agree. So there's no, you know, and I don't think there's going to be a fan, at least for that, the rollover rule, you know, where it's like, I think those are the innings where it's like, you kind of do, you're like, okay, can we just flip this? Can we just get some new hitters in here and kind of flip it around? I think even fans appreciate it.
So over the weekend, I was doing some of these interviews with Angels players for Baseball Tonight. And one of the questions that we've been asking them is, now that Shohei Ohtani is 100% healthy, what is his potential impact as a pitcher and as a position player? And I tell you what, like, the way that the other players lit up when they talked about Ohtani, I'm going to give something away. Mike Trout is following you on the podcast today, but I asked him what he's capable of. And he talked about 10 plus wins and 30 plus home runs. They absolutely love how he looks this spring.
Well, especially, yeah, I was just going to say how well he's been approaching. I mean, one of the biggest things that I know Joe Maddon has talked about is kind of lessening the amount of physical work that he has to do, is almost rehab, because he's pitching and hitting. They're going to let him now probably hit and play the day after he pitches instead of sitting that one out. And there's just this sense of, like, I mean, for all of us, right? That childlike feeling of when you're playing the game versus a business. And it just felt like in the very beginning, and rightfully so, you have this magical unicorn basically in a player that you never see. So everyone wants to protect it. But there's some part of that of just let him go to be him. And when you hear it from his teammates and even other players in the game, Buster, I think there's that sense of, like, what's the word, like where you really, like, that's what everyone started playing. Like, we all hit and pitched, right? Like, we all were like that player that just kind of did everything, and that you get to see it now on a daily basis from the Angels and Shohei Ohtani.
And he looks great. You know, he put on about 15 pounds. He looks stronger. You know, I talked, I think, a couple weeks ago about what an evaluator told me, that, you know, those days of the spindly giraffe, those are gone. He looks strong. He looks like he's having fun. You know, he's not playing catch with his interpreter anymore. He's playing catch with Andrew Heaney. And then Joe Maddon said, look, when you're done your work with the pitchers, go take batting practice. It seems to be working really well. And I think there's a feeling in the organization, like, we need to figure out if this is going to work. And so we're going to take the bubble wrap off him.
Yes.
We're going to get it, let him go and just pitch and hit. And if it works, great. And he can realize his dream. And if it doesn't work, then we'll make an adjustment.
And I think this is that last go, because I think people were surprised after he came back from Tommy John surgery. I think there was this assumption like, okay, he's going to be a pitcher and not allow him to do both. You need to have that bubble wrap, like the whole thing that we see with most pitchers, right? And I think it was like, no, we got him for a reason, because it is going to be hard and it's not going to be simple and he is going to get hurt, but let's let him be him. And if there is anything more Joe Maddon, it's that. You know, you can argue like coaching, all the different things, but he allows players to be who they are. And I think that includes how they prepare and what they do to get themselves out on the field.
So the first time I was around Juan Soto was with you. You arranged for us on the Sunday Night Baseball crew. I think it was in 2018, 19, when he was a rookie. To stand in with Kevin Long, hitting coach, and Soto as he went through a pregame batting practice regimen. And it was amazing how precise he was. And that certainly has been reflected in how he's developed as a hitter. He's precise in his planning. You can tell that he, in his plate appearances, he has a very strong idea of what the opposing pitcher is going to try to do. He doesn't chase many pitches out of the zone. And when he gets a pitch to hit, like Barry Bonds would go into a game, you know, knowing that he might only get one or two pitches to hit at during the course of the game, and he was ready. And that's how Juan Soto is already at age 22. So I've been thinking about him, and what's a great stat to reflect all that discipline and that precision and his ability to put bat to ball, because it's such a unique skill. And so I thought, you know what? How about a stat where it's the number of total bases per swing, which speaks a lot about his ability to make contact, also to anticipate what pitch is coming in. So I had Paul Hambachides run numbers on what we call the crush quotient. It's a really simple statistic. It's the number of total bases per 100 swings. You know, baseball began tracking swings starting in 1988. Hembo, when he ran these numbers, started from 1988, and I tell you what, it came back exactly what we would have hoped for. The best players in baseball, the elite hitters in baseball, are at the top of these charts. Since 1988, total bases per 100 swings, number one in baseball, Albert Pujols; two, Mike Trout; three, Fernando Tatis Jr.; four, Alex Rodriguez; and Juan Soto, fifth. Last year, 60-game season, you know, Soto didn't start on time because he had COVID, then he returned. He led the majors in this statistic, crush quotient, 35.8 total bases per 100 swings. That was the best in baseball by far. Will Myers was second, Padres, Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, DJ LeMahieu. How do you like
pretty decent hitters? Yeah, I was going to say, and I know that feeling when you're looking up numbers and you're hoping that the return, as far as the players, that it isn't just the player you're looking at. And so when I saw you in your column and this came, I was like, this is exactly the perfect scenario. It's like the best hitters in the game. But also if you think about it, because it's one thing, you know, you talk about hitters that can make contact like DJ LeMahieu, you know, hitters that rarely strike out, you know, their ability to walk, a great eye, all these things. But when they get those few opportunities to actually hit a pitch, they do want to crush it. They don't want to just get a base hit up the middle. You know, they're situational, but they want to hit it with the maximum efficiency that their body and swing can provide. That is Juan Soto. when he is precise in his batting practice and we're watching his pregame routines, we're watching the way he goes about the game. By the way, at 19 years old, when we did that, he was 19. it's because he wants to put the maximum amount of power into the one swing he might get in that at bat. And that to me is pitch selection. One, like you have to find the swing there to be able to maximize your potential, but also just the patience and the precision, like you said, of being able to do that. And clearly the best hitters in baseball, it's a few amount that can do it, but the ones that do, it's pretty magical to watch.
Hembo ran this starting in 2018, Soto's first year in the big league. Since then, he's seventh in the big leagues in crush quotient. The top five hitters in the big leagues, Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Alex Bregman, Christian Yelich, Fernando Tatis Jr. So Jesus. It's a number that seems to reflect exactly what it hoped it would.
Jess, CQ. Thanks for doing this. CQ. That's going to be the new thing. CQ. Crush quotient. Thanks, Buster.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So I talked to Mike Trout in a rapid-fire interview over the weekend, and as usual, he was funny. Give a listen.
Let's start with this. What importance do you place on hitting 300?
Hitting 300? The 300 number obviously is definitely a goal. Hitting over 300 is, every year you come in, if you hit over 300, you're having a pretty good year. For me, it's just not worrying about the numbers and worrying about just how I feel at the plate. And then at the end of the season, the numbers will be there. I think if I focus on preparing myself and getting in the right spot to perform, to hit, and being comfortable up there, the numbers will be there at the end of the season.
You know, 50 years, 300 was the number everyone really focused on. If you hit 300, it was a big deal. How much do you think players think about it?
I think people think about it a lot. I mean, 300 is a good number. I mean, if you hit 300 nowadays, it's, the way the pitching is going, I think it's definitely a huge accomplishment.
What'd you learn from 2020?
2020, what a weird year. I didn't really realize how much the fans impacted the game. Being out there playing with no fans and just listening to the crowd noise and just big situations where, you feed off the crowd. It was just tough to play by last year.
What hobby or skill did you develop during the shutdown?
During the shutdown, I played video games, which was bad. Bad news for me, because now I'm hooked.
I hear you're pretty good at video games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting there. There's always things you can improve on, but I play a lot, and I don't think my wife's real happy about that, but, it's for this.
A question we've been asking all of your teammates, and I'll ask you the same question, and this doesn't have to be in baseball or on a baseball field. What is Mike Trout not good at?
Mike Trout not good at?
I've got some answers. I've heard a lot about you short game.
Oh man, that's recently. When I was playing every day, if I play every day, I'll beat anybody besides on this team. Maybe not Albert, but I know I probably came from Jay Up or Dexter. They probably said that short game's bad right now. Hey man, when you're a dad and you don't have time to golf, I mean, I've golfed twice in the last 6 months, so it's tough to keep that short game sharp. But right now, it's not ideal. Not a comfortable situation sitting over that ball when you have a 30-yard chip. So
Ohtani is fully healthy. What is he capable of as a two-way player in your eyes?
Yeah, I see, you know, 10-plus wins as a pitcher, and I can see 30 homers. So, not, I mean, if he does that, that's stupid.
Why should there be reason for optimism for the Angels in 2021?
Yeah, I think the guys we brought in, you know, not only the great baseball players, but they're great around in the clubhouse. The chemistry is unbelievable. Perry's been great. It's all loose. Got great arms. Added some guys in the bullpen, and obviously the front end. And you got Ohtani. I think he's the wild card. I think if he can stay healthy, he's going to be the big factor.
Who's the most exciting player in baseball?
Most exciting right now, I guess it's Tatis. You can argue Acuna too. Them two are fun to watch, but. You know, just the way the everything happened last year with Tatis, I think it was probably he's most exciting.
Who's got the most swag in baseball?
Most swag? Wow. It's another one. Acuna or Tatis, maybe Machado's. Machado's in there. You know, I like what he brings to the table.
And you are done, sir.
I appreciate it. 4 minutes. Wow.
They told me 10. Wow. I like that. You got 6 extra minutes somewhere. So if you need extra time, let me know.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Buster, good talking to you, buddy.
You too. Say hi to your folks for me.
I will, buddy. See ya.
David Basse is the host of Dodger Talk and AM 570. He's joining us to do a Dodgers preview. He thinks that's why he's joining us. Really, I'm going to bring him on the podcast to indict him for being the only person who said something bad about my home state of Vermont. Like, unsolicited one day, David, you came up to me and you basically said in so many words, I think there's a profanity mixed in. You were like, Vermont stinks. And I didn't get that. I still don't get that. What was that about?
Oh, Buster, Vermont, great syrup, I guess. I'm not sure what else it has to offer besides you and syrup.
Wow. I guess that is the most backhanded compliment ever given out to anybody. Like, I need to find anybody else in the world who's got something to say bad to say about Vermont. All right. I want to start with this. One thing I noticed is that when the Dodgers have success in the postseason, and let's face it, they've had a lot of it. When I've seen highlights of those, you seem to get crushed in the champagne celebrations. What's the worst you've ever gotten, the most that a player's ever hammered you?
Oh, wow. Well, it would have to be Yasiel Puig one year. He really got me. Yasiel Puig really got me good. It was the 2018 division championship, and it just felt like it continued to flow, and I had no idea what was going on. And then Justin Turner, we were in on the East Coast when they also won the first round, the NLDS, and Justin Turner just completely got me. We were in Baltimore, actually. It was 2019 in Baltimore, and Justin Turner just let it flow while I was interviewing Joe Kelly, and I think that one went viral.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of moments. You clearly have become a big part of the Dodgers celebration, and you know, they've had a lot to celebrate. In recent decades, the Yankees of 1998 won 114 games in the regular season. The 2001 Mariners won 116. Do you look at the 2021 Dodgers team and think they might be able to approach those kind of numbers?
Feels that way, Buster. But the only reason why I would say they are not going to chase that is because there have been a couple of opportunities in the last 6 years where they were chasing some regular season milestones and records as far as a team goes. And they chose not to push the gas on it because they had October in mind. And so far in spring training, that's really been the message from Dave Roberts and Andrew Friedman. It's not just about getting to October, it's getting through October. And if you look at the way they've constructed the pitching staff, especially coming off a 60-game season, that's what they're trying to send the message to everybody to buy in on. Yeah, you would love to make 30 starts. Yeah, you would love to make 70 appearances as a reliever, but we're going to protect you from yourself and from injuries. So everybody that's key to the run in October is going to be healthy and doesn't have some sort of injury. So I would say under normal circumstances, coming off a normal 162 games last year, they may approach that, but I feel like they are going to protect their players from trying to go too far to go for that.
Where does the closer situation stand? We know each of the last two regular seasons going into the postseason, Dave Roberts just kind of left it open when Kenley Jansen's had some issues and said, you know, they were going to make the decisions based day to day. What's the sense going into 2021?
Well, number one, the very first day of spring training, Dave Roberts and Mark Pryor said that Kenley Jansen is going to be their closer on opening day, and they have not strayed away from that. Kenley, to his credit, has pitched well in spring training. He hasn't given up a run this spring. He's obviously not facing the world beaters in this spring training, but still, he's taking care of business against the guys he should be. The velocity is still never going to be 95, 96 cutters like it used to be. It's around 88 to 91, but the Dodgers maintain they're looking at the life on the cutter more than the velocity on the cutter. And Andrew Friedman and Dave Roberts have told me they're a better team if Kenley Jansen is their closer. With all that being said, Buster, they do have plan B and plan C. Whether or not they're going to say that publicly or not remains to be seen. But I find it very interesting that David Price went to the Dodgers after they signed, or right about the time that they signed Trevor Bauer, and let them know that he would be willing to pitch in relief. And early in spring here, he has pitched on 3 days rest, which makes me believe that they are getting him ready for a relief role. And I believe that if Kenley Jansen falters and they feel like they have to find another closer, David Price might be that guy. Because number one, he's not scared. He has the stuff, and he has done it early in his career. Interesting enough, early on under Andrew Friedman with the Tampa Bay Rays.
That's right, closing out Game 7 of the American League Championship Series against the Boston Red Sox. I was going to ask about how David's declaration that he was willing to do anything resonated within that team.
Oh, yeah. It's similar to the way Mookie Betts made some statements early on in spring training last year, where he challenged the team to practice like it was Game 7 of the World Series. And it feels like David Price, who opted out of the season last year, comes into spring training, looks around, and understands that I'm not just the guy. I have to find a way to be part of this team. And so I feel like him volunteering that really resonated with the rest of the team, that it's not just about you. It's not just about me. It's about the team. And after everything he's accomplished in his career, for him to volunteer to pitch in relief, I think definitely it resonates with the rest of that team.
I got two questions for you, 2 minutes left. Corey Seager is going to be a free agent at year's end. We've seen in recent seasons that teams, you know, elite free agents, potential free agents have signed with their teams. Mookie Betts did it last year. The Mets are talking to Francisco Lindor now. Is there any chance Corey Seager, client of Scott Boras and the Dodgers, might work something out before the start of the season?
I wouldn't rule it out, but just from Corey's answers in spring training, it doesn't seem like they will, Buster. I feel right. Like it benefits both sides to let it play out for the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you on that. And I'm curious about this, too, and I probably should ask this after you gave me a David Price answer. The culture in that clubhouse has become a strength. I remember when I covered the Yankee teams from 1998 to 2001, there were times when maybe they weren't playing as well, maybe they were kind of beating up older guys, but their clubhouse culture, their confidence became a strength through difficult situations. And my sense is that gradually there's been such buy-in from the players and what the front office, Dave Roberts, are trying to do, that now that culture has become really dangerous for them. What do you think?
100% true. And you got buy-in from Justin Turner. You've got buy-in from Clayton Kershaw. I mean, when you have those two guys buying into what the front office is trying to accomplish, that kind of is, it kind of does Dave Roberts' job for him in that clubhouse to get these younger guys now that will be taking Kike Hernandez's spot and Jock Peterson's spot to really buy in and to understand the direction they're trying to go in. And like you said, Buster, I've heard this from Dave Roberts. You know, Joe Torre had Posada, Pettit, Jeter to police that clubhouse. And I don't believe like these players the last 6 or 7 years have gotten enough credit like those players did for being able to hold each other accountable. Because for me, that's been the key to this sustained success, the players in that clubhouse.
I lied to you. Got one more question. 30 seconds left. We know the rivalry between the Padres and Dodgers might be the best in baseball this year. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is the level of tension between the teams?
You know, I feel like, Buster, the tension from the Padres side is higher than it is on the Dodgers side after not only what we saw as far as the emotions in the NLDS, but also in the final regular and actually every regular season series last year. It felt like the Padres were the little brother trying to prove something to the bigger brother each and every game that they played. And I felt like it kind of worked against the Padres. So if they can control their emotions in these games, and the Dodgers are the Dodgers. It's hard to say they need to prove something to the Padres. I'm not being arrogant about it, but that's kind of the way the Dodgers feel.
I can't wait to watch those games. You know, I still haven't forgiven you with that shot at Vermont, but nice job today. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, man, you're the best, Buster. I really appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. And one last push for Courtside here. I'll probably push it again later this week, but please listen to my hard work and some great analysis from my friends Greenberg and Dokic wherever you get your podcasts. They would appreciate it. I would appreciate it. Let's go to the tweets. Jason Amico is first up at Jason Amico. He writes in, should players be more transparent like Bauer is about the rules and stipulations they are restricted by? What do you think of him doing so? And he tweeted a link of Trevor Bauer, who tweeted out what Major League Baseball sent him as a violation of he wore a belt with a logo on it, and they didn't like that, and they said if you do it again, you're gonna get fined.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. When situations like this pop up, all of this is under collective bargaining, right? And all the rules that are put in place for stuff like this, the union has agreed to. So if Trevor Bauer, other players don't like the rules in place, contact Tony Clark. And then when the CBA is up at the end of the year and they want to loosen restrictions, the union can fight for that. Does that make sense?
Plain and simple. Pretty seems simple to me.
They're not forced to wear, like they're not forced to go by these rules. They don't have to, right? It's all collectively bargained.
Seems like that should be discussed the next time the two sides meet.
Yeah.
Let's go to Debbie Games Brown. She writes in, hey, Buster, are there any players that got excessively sick from COVID or suffered repercussions like Eduardo Rodriguez from the virus?
I haven't heard to the extent. I mean, there were folks in the minor leagues who were affected tragically. In terms of big leaguers, the one obviously we're all aware of last year, Freddie Freeman, been working on some pieces about him. Boy, you know, at one point his temperature spiked 104.5 and he got down on his knees and prayed that he would be able to wake up in the morning. That's how scared he was by what he experienced last summer.
Let's move on to Eric Sorensen at Coach Sorensen 9. He sent in a little bit of sound here. He said, here you go, Buster. Here's some bird sounds, and can we get some love for beef cows out there in this world? Let's hear sounds from Coach Sorensen. You guys should check it out on Twitter. A lovely pasture, some beef cows roaming around. How'd you like that, Buster?
I don't think that was a pasture. I think it was a barnyard. Let's go.
Oh, sorry.
So man, those birds were excited. Like they must have been dropping like the cattle feed. Because sometimes when the cows get done, birds will drop in and you know they'll start to pick up some remnants. Growing up, we always kept one or two Angus for beef. Our first Angus that we kept, I remember we called her Little Bub. And my first pet was Daniel Boone, who was an Angus steer who became lunch at some point. And Herefords, you know, I always liked Herefords. Herefords and Angus are my two favorite beef cows. What about you, Taylor?
I'll go Angus guy for sure.
Very nice. Okay.
All right. That's it for Bleacher Tweets for Monday. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, to David, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And also, thanks to Mike Trout. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.